Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and I'm going to take the headphones up just a little bit. How's that? Everybody okay there?
You did.
That way you can hear yourself talk, so to speak. Gil is our engineer today. He just got out of jail, and he's behaving himself, so that's a good thing. I have guests to keep me in order. I've got Jeremy from Harker's Automotive. I've got Ellen, who actually runs the store, and then I've got Bob, who says he runs the store, but he and everybody else knows that Ellen does. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning.
Ellen?
Hi.
Pull your mic just a little closer to you, that's all. You're okay. All right, and then, and what's it like, I work around women too. If she wasn't here, what's it like?
I'd be lost.
Okay, fair enough. And you work the front counter, right?
I do it all. And when I go even just to get a drink or iced tea or something, he's like, don't go. Please don't go.
Yeah.
So he doesn't. I do everything in the office. Talk to the customers. Take the money.
And when the person's on the other side of you and you get to tell me what you brought your car in, and they say it doesn't start.
I have a series of questions I ask him. You know, okay. Is it a crank and no start, or is it you turn the key and nothing? You know, give me some more. So because these guys are relying on me to get all the right information to make their job easier.
And I think you'll agree that a lot of times that's going to save them a whole lot of money because, like you said, a no start is cranks over fine but doesn't start.
Right.
Click, no start. Start right. Or drag, no start, and nothing.
Right.
And so in the absence of that, and the worst part is the husband drives the car and he sends his wife in who can't answer all those. But he's too busy for that.
That's right. And so it's my job to pull as much, or I'll call the husband, you know, because these guys are relying on me. It makes their job easier.
Sure.
They need to know what avenue they're looking for, electrical, diagnostic, or...
And Bob, how much, if she gives you that information, how much diagnostic time does it save them if at least they'll give us that path?
Oh, quite a bit. At least a half an hour.
And I've said that many times. At least a half an hour's worth of time as opposed to my car doesn't start and you say why and say call my husband. Or
what technician we give it to. That's the difference.
Oh, okay. And do you brag about all of them?
We brag about all of them.
Yeah, and so do I.
Yes.
So do I. Now, we have a guy that does really good alignments. Really good alignments. Understands them. This guy came in the other day and had a Mustang, and he said, I wanted you to give it to a senior tech, but I don't want anybody to drive it because it has 650 horsepower, and it's just beyond people's capability. And my daughter, Andy, was helping him, and she says, how many horsepower does the Corvette have? We have a twin-turbo Corvette, a Z06. And I says, I don't know, a dyno at about 800. She says, I'm going to say that to him. I said, no, you're not. Just leave it alone. And he brought his specs in. He brought his own specs in. He had his dial caster out.
Oh, no.
So I don't know what his return to center is going to be, but he's going to be driving that car all the time. And he wouldn't take any advice. So it was, we set it up as he liked it, and we'll deal with that. So will he. But taking it 3 degrees would have been perfect, but he says go to zero or do the best we can to go to zero. And so, but it's okay. Every day, Alan, you get somebody that comes in that wants to direct the repair of their car.
Yes, we do get that. Okay.
And we're all good at fixing that. We're all good at dealing with that.
Right.
Do you get a lot of ladies come in to tell you their husband said this?
Oh, yes. We get that quite a bit.
Okay.
And if they don't know, again, I'll call.
Okay.
Or I do the same if they leave an early bird drop-off. We have to call to find out what we're looking for. So we're looking at the right place.
Okay. And that's the way it is. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We get really busy in the second hour, so now's the time to call in. Again, 602-508-0960. And here's what we'd like you to consider. We'd like the year, make, and model of the car, how many miles it's got on it, and let's talk about symptoms. What doesn't work is what we've been talking about right now. The guy on YouTube said, or my next-door neighbor said, because they're no better at diagnosing your car than we are, and that's part of the communication is we're going to ask you questions. And there's three answers. Yes, no, I don't know. And that's easy. That's an easy one to overcome. Jeremy is a man. Give me a list of your ASC tests. Master Tech is all 8 automotive.
Right.
Okay, go.
So I actually have 12 certifications. The A1 through A8 is your master certifications. A9 is a light diesel certification. After that, you have L1, which is your advanced level performance for diagnostic and engine performance of gasoline engines. Then I also have the L2, which is kind of an advanced level for diesel. And it actually does get into a little more than the light diesel, which we at Larry Harker's, we don't get into
big trucks.
And then I also have the X1, which is a exhaust undercar specialist certification, which deals with your, you know, all your exhaust and kind of some of your suspension components and stuff like that. So altogether, it comes to 12. I know back when I first started, I've been a master for 20 years. And only know that because when they sent the re-up, it says you've been a master for 20 years. And I said, has it been that long? I don't remember all that. But I know every few years there seems to be another test that comes up. So it's up to 12 now that I have. And, you know, you recertify every 5 years for those. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely challenging, you know, all the tests. You take the test and then you recertify, which is the same test, just less questions.
And how do you fit into this family?
Well, I am the son-in-law, and I have worked for Bob and Ellen for 19 years, and we work together really well. You know, I was gonna jump in there because Ellen does a great job at getting information on all the cars. If you ever wanna get to her, you know, you say, hey, you forgot to write something down, because most of the time she writes it down and we forget to read it. So
don't forget. We don't use the word forget. We did read it, but I've got so many cars on my toolbox.
I enjoy coming back and saying, okay, it is down there. Why did you forget it? But you're not one of you do very well.
And how's Bob do? Your husband?
He does very good. He's very,
so he's not part of the problem.
No. I am the problem.
Yeah. That's true.
We all answer to him, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yep. And it is that way. Now, as a master tech, do you get paid more? I think we give everybody like a $50,000 a year for each test. So I'm just wondering if there was anything.
That sounds like a plan we should explore.
You know, you want to send the paramedics in? Yeah. Bob, your father-in-law just had a heart attack.
Yep. Well, that's impressive for you to have all of those, because you're the first person I've ever met that has all of those.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to tell you a quick diesel story. We're up north at the ranch, and one of the cowboys has a 94 diesel 5.9. It cranks, but it doesn't catch. So we put ether in it, and it starts and runs. So at least we know the mechanical side's good, but we know we got some fuel problems. So we're all messing around with it, and we're priming the pump on the underside of the car that takes a magician to hit. And there's a bunch of us there. So we call this mobile technician. His name's Randy. So he comes up, and he's looking at all of us, and he's just shaking his head. And he says, hit the key. And so we hit the key, and he goes, okay, stop. And he goes, hit the key. And it started.
Fuel cut solenoid, wasn't
it? That's it. Yep. That's it. That's it. We're all looking, what is that? But what was really strange is all of us, and many of us have automotive background, the top of the fuel switch is supposed to be domed epoxy, and it had all come apart. And we're all looking at it, but it doesn't click with anybody.
Right.
So we had him put the lift pump that we had already bought in anyway. And put the pump cell in. What'd you call it?
It's a fuel cut solenoid.
Okay. Okay.
And there's a rod that goes to it, and if you manually open it up, that solenoid is weak or not working, it'll start right away. And I've had multiple of those where they crank over, they don't start. When you shut the key off, it slams back, immediately shuts the engine off. And sometimes they'll get weak. And if you're up north and it's cold, you know, that solenoid just can't quite get it to pull enough electrical circuitry to, you know, close that the contacts or whatever it is inside, and it won't pull it over. And if you get underneath and you have somebody crank it, and then you pull it over, it'll start right away, and it's pretty easy to figure out. Of
okay.
course, when you're out in the middle of nowhere, nothing's real easy to figure out
no.
sometimes.
Okay, Mr. Big Shot. After Cowboy A lifts the lever, and then we're all yucking it up, and then the guy that's driving it turns the key off, and it doesn't shut off.
So now somebody's going to have to go put that rod back over because that's why they call it a fuel cut.
We're pooping and scooping when this happens because we're all looking around going, whoa, what are we going to do now? But you're right. Somebody looked at it and said, oh, well, we just have to lift this because the solenoid picks up that rod.
And it's not easy to get to. They kind of stick that thing underneath. You have to put your arm way under where you don't really feel comfortable, you know, back where that the lift pump and stuff is on the diesels there. So I know that nobody likes getting that far deep into them anyway.
Yeah. Okay, Gil, we got a caller. Who's that?
That would be Manny.
Manny, good morning to you. What can we do for you?
Good morning, Mark. I've got a 2010 Journey. Dodge Journey, and a short rundown. It started a couple years back when they had a recall on the ignition switch, had that changed out. Still doing the same thing every now and then. But anyhow, even the emergency lights and the horn would go off any time. So I took out the fuses on the horn. The hazard lights I can't do nothing about. But now...
Manny, stop, stop.
Yeah.
Tell us what's wrong with it, okay? Your path to the repair obviously didn't work, but let's start with the symptoms. What were you working on?
Oh, well, right now, the light, the switch will go on sometimes, and it'll go off. But what's happening is, as you're going along, it kind of stumbles the... It's like it shifts down, and the tack, you can see where the tack just zooms up. And it's, you know, my wife says she has to stop, turn it off for a little bit, and then turn it back on. And then it seems like it'll be working okay until it happens again.
Okay, so in a nutshell, what's going on is you're driving down the road, and it's downshifting for no reason. That would be the tack coming up. Okay, you got anything, Jeremy? You got to fix this one. It's the first call.
If the tack goes up, does the car... continue to accelerate, or are you talking like the tack goes up and it almost feels like it's slipping, like the RPMs are going, but your car isn't going any faster?
Yeah, that's about it, yeah.
So,
okay, let me ask you a question. When the tack goes up, you don't speed up, right?
Or no.
Does it slip and you slow down a little bit?
It kind of slows down a little bit, yeah.
So... yeah, that's going to be a transmission issue. Anytime the RPMs go up, and either it's neutraling out or feels like it's kind of not going as fast as it was, you have a slipping condition. Now, there's a lot of things that can cause that. If you've had other issues, I mean, it's possible to be electrical, but that could be mechanical. That could be any kind of problem internal to the transmission.
Okay, so we're going to take a break, Manny. You stay right there. When we come back, you're going to give me like the first three steps.
Sure.
I already know the first one, though.
Okay.
Check the fluid.
Check the fluid in the first one.
All right. I don't spot me the second or third one. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to ask a question, you got three guys here. Bob, how many years of experience do you have?
Be honest.
52?
In car repair. In car repair.
I've been at the shop 52
okay,
years.
Okay, 50, Jeremy?
And I'm, let's see.
Add this up for me.
97, so... that's 22.
22 and 51, and add my 39.
Oh.
Okay.
Good Lord. How many years do you want to add
okay.
that up?
Okay. We're going to have to take a break while we all
you're
get this
have to
ready.
Get your calculator.
Yeah. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. We should turn on our microphones. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurtz Automotive is up at I-17 in Bell. Like most of the shops that I can refer you to, they do a good job. They've been open since 1987. And Kurt is surrounded by Eric and Jeff, and the three of them are all ASE masters, and they know what they're talking about, and they know how to diagnose your car. They're not going to guess. And that's because they're not going to guess. Every once in a while, we all have to raise our hands and say, we can't get this. We're going to have to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. But Kurtz is a good place. So if you live up near I-17 in Bell, they work on domestic, foreign, both gas and diesel. That's Kurtz Auto, northeast corner of Bell and I-17. Manny, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, go right ahead.
So anyhow, the transmission I can't get into.
Okay,
it's one of those.
Let me tell you some of the steps we would go. Since the transmission is, you got the RPMs raising, there's a couple steps we would do. First and foremost, you check the fluid condition and level, and from there you drive it. And what you're looking for is when does this happen? Does it happen at a shift? Because there's certain things, if it shifts in a certain gear, and that's what's causing the RPM to go up, you could have a problem with that gear. You could also have a speed issue where it's maybe shifting the transmission to a lower gear that's causing it to go, and the reason it feels like it's neutral is because it's not going into the correct gear. So getting exactly what the computer is looking for, what speed it's trying to do, that'll give it an indication of where to go next. From there, if it is commanding a gear, you got to make sure that you have signals actually getting to the transmission and all the electrical portions working. If all that's working, you could have just a transmission internal, you know, clutch slippage type of issue. However, if you turn it off and turn it back on, that is a little less likely to be the problem.
And so another thing, too, is the dipstick would typically tell you how to check it. It'll tell you in drive or in park and hot or cold.
Right.
And so, Manny, that's important, is that you follow the dipstick. And when you talk about transmission watching the transmission order, I think we not only watch what's coming in, but what's going out. Right. And that's not something the three-whiskered kid at AutoZone can do.
Yeah, that's going to take a higher-level scanner, somebody that has a little bit more expensive equipment, I guess.
And it costs... Huh?
Yeah, that's getting into the thousands of dollars for those types of scanners that can do that. The average little code readers don't do anywhere near that level of diagnostics.
Well, that level of diagnostic is we get to go inside and talk and watch the computer and the inputs and the outputs. The code
command
reader,
them. Yeah,
codes tell us this. The problem's in Ohio. We have to find the city, the street, and the house number. So the code doesn't tell you anything. It just kind of gives you a general idea. And how many times, Jeremy, have you had an O2 sensor where we had a vacuum leak and it wasn't the O2 sensor?
Multiple times.
Yeah.
Or even an exhaust leak. You know, you get a crack in the exhaust above the O2 sensor and it'll keep thinking the sensor's reading wrong. And it's actually, you know, the input, that sensor signal is bad.
And, Bob, how many times, what percentage, just guess, what... Move your cord off your mic because you're misbehaving again.
Uh-oh. Hey,
you're misbehaving.
Can't take me anywhere.
Okay, I know. How many of all the O2 sensors that come in, how many of them necessitate an O2 sensor, and how many of them are vacuum leaks, plug fuel filters, exhaust leaks? About what percentage actually needs an O2 sensor?
Probably 50%.
And I'm going to guess 40.
That's
right. It's about half.
40, 50, maybe.
And how many of them come in with, you lift it up and it's got all new O2 sensors?
Oh, we get a lot of those.
You know, but the light's still on.
I've been there, I've done all this, and it still doesn't work. And I go, well, that's kind of an expensive diagnostic procedure.
Yeah, how'd that work for you? You know, the kid, but the code reader, that's all it does. It tells you what state it's in. You gotta go find it. Yeah. And the code reader doesn't have that back and forth. Getting back to the transmission, would a manual shift tell you anything on that journey?
Yes, actually, when you go to the manual shift, you know, you're locking it into a gear, and you can basically check each gear individually. Sometimes if they're intermittent, the problem, what it sounds like Manny's problem is, if it's coming and going, you know, there's multiple things it could be. But if you can, one thing you always run into is if you check everything at the time that it's working, you're not going to find anything in particular. Sometimes they don't even set codes, but you can at least put a bit of a load on each gear, kind of simulate what speeds he was having the issue with, and then make sure that, you know, you don't have a particular gear that's weak, you know, by just giving it an extra load, going a little harder in one gear. And that is a good tool to use anytime you have that option of the manual shift, because sometimes you can quickly tell if you have a mechanical fault.
And when you talk about loading it, you're talking about bringing it up high in the RPMs. So bring it up to 4, bring it up to 3.
And even going up a hill, if you got, you know, available to, you know, give it a little extra load to where it's having to hold a little bit more torque than the average, you know, nice city driving or just easy driving. You're giving it a little more throttle, you're going up a hill. Something like that always puts more load on those clutches inside the transmission.
Hey, Bob, is Jeremy from, like, West Virginia where they have hills? Where's he going to go? Camelback Mountain and go up and down Camelback?
Well, we've kind of spoiled him. We put a dyno in.
Oh, okay. Hey, I got to ask you a question. Is it certified for speed?
No.
Okay. No. We can't find one for certified. I need to run a truck to certify the 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. and we can't find one. It has to do with some legal case. So anyway, a dyno's pretty good for that of stuff, and you can load it, and you can climb hills with the dynamometer because you can set the load.
Right.
And then when your tires start squealing, then Jeremy's pushed too much load into it.
Yeah, you smell it long before they start squealing.
Okay. All righty, Dan, you're up. How can we help you?
Yeah, good morning, family.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Dan.
It's Dan with the 2019 77 Dodge.
Oh, yeah.
We recognize you.
77
Dodge.
I'm
good to hear you all on the radio.
Well, we bailed out Bob, and we told him him and Ellen could come, but then Bob needed a little help from Jeremy, and then so Jeremy came. They asked me to come along, and I told him it'd probably be a good idea so I could push the buttons. And then we have Jeremy's wife here, Carrie, who's just too shy to take a microphone.
She keeps me in line, though. I can't do anything without her.
You know what? Let me tell you a quick story. In your marriage, who's Jack the Ripper and who's Snow White? Huh?
Well,
I can tell you right now, I know who it is, and I just met her.
You see when that eyebrow goes up like that? You gotta look out. When the eyebrow goes up, you better buckle down. And it's gonna be a rough one.
Yeah. And Ellen and Bob.
Whoa.
I'm gonna ask Bob. Snow White or Jack the Ripper?
Jack. I'm Snow White.
I'll give you an example. The girls, when we had teenage girls, they would go to their mother and they'd say, we want to go to the football game tonight, and then afterwards we're going to go to a huge boondocker party in North Scottsdale and we're going to smoke grass and get drunk. And my wife would say, go ask your father.
I've heard that one many times.
Yeah, exactly. All righty. Well, listen, Dan, we're going to put you on hold because we're up against a break, and when we come back, if you have a question, we'll take it. And if you want to try to stump Jeremy and Bob and Ellen, then we'll take that too. The rest of you, we have four open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You can call us if you have a car question, and we're really good at marital spats. So if you and your wife argue about a particular aspect of your car, like why should we run it in recirculation, why should we run it in outside air and stuff like that, we can describe all of that to you. So if you have a marital issue that has to do with the car, not whether he drinks too much or whether she wears too much lipstick, we're not doing that, okay? 602-508-0960. We have four open lines, and you're welcome to grab it. My name is Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday talking about cars. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting to my left is Jeremy, the lead technicians at Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Next to him is Ellen. She actually runs the shop, and she takes care of all. She doesn't. She commands all the men. Next to her is Bob, that poor son of a gun. And then, of course, there's me. And Dan. Dan called in. Just give me a brief thing about Dan, because he's your customer.
Yes, Dan, he is, and he's just the nicest guy you ever want to meet, and his truck, whatever it is, 77.
Yeah, he's got a couple of them.
Yeah, and they mean everything to him, and he takes really good care. And he's been to a couple places that didn't want to listen to all of his problems and didn't solve a lot of his problems. And he came to us, about a year ago, I think, or was 6 months ago or something? But he has been happy ever since, and just the nicest guy. I wish a lot of our customers were like him.
Well, and it's just a communication level.
Right.
It's hard when the wife comes in and she doesn't know.
Right.
So we call the husbands, as you alluded. So
yeah.
It's that front counter
yes.
stuff. Okay, we're going to go to John. John, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I got a 09 Ford F-150, and I had it diagnosed, and they told me it's got a real bad missing. And on each cylinder head, there on the valve cover, there's what they call a solenoid that controls the timing.
Okay.
So he had me go buy two of them, one for each side, and he was supposed to install them, but now he's in such a problem that he can't do it because he's backlogged for the last 2 weeks, and I was wondering if you can recommend somebody on the North website that I can have these solenoids installed.
You want to comment on that, Jeremy?
Well, what you said, you had a misfire.
It's missing like crazy. He reprogrammed it.
Hold on. Let us ask you some questions.
So, when you drive this, is it misfire all the time? In other words, when it's at idle to when you rev this vehicle, the engine up, does it always feel like it has a misfire?
Right. Right.
Is he talking about coilover?
Well, he's talking about the cam advance actuator,
oh, okay.
I believe. And the problem with that is, you know, it's going to advance the intake or the exhaust cams, but usually there is a point when it should smooth out if that's the issue, because they can get stuck, and Ford has had some issues with them going which way. But I'm just wondering, at what point did we determine that the actuator itself was bad? Because honestly, there are so many possibilities. The solenoid directs oil to this actuator in the front of the cam. The cam has another passageway that is oil actuated that then advances or retards timing to this camshaft. And the problem you run into is electrically you have to have that solenoid working, but you also have to have the oil passageways clean, and then the actuator itself has to work, and there's a lot of
moving parts
all can give you the exact same problem. So it sounds like this is kind of the first step, let's try this type of thing and see what we do.
John, you're not going to want to take it to a shop and hand them, you know, these two components that you have and say to them, put these on. And
right.
But one of my cowboys has the same thing, and our guy said it's $550 to $800 on
right.
the worst case
right.
scenario. And,
right.
and if that's the case, they've got to go in quite deep to the motor. So really, I think what Jeremy's saying is you really need a better diagnosis. There is a deeper okay. diagnosis, and our industry is capable of identifying really close what's going on. And what you said about it runs fine sometimes, the cowboy says the same thing. There's times,
well,
but I don't believe him, because Fords don't run good at all.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'll start it up, and it's sitting there missing like crazy. And when I get down the road at a really high RPM, it seems like it's smooth out a little bit.
Okay.
And now what happened is, I took it to him, and he used some kind of gadget. He reprogrammed it, or whatever you want to call it, and it ran smooth for a couple of days, and then boom, it's back to where it's at.
Okay. I don't know what he did, but that does help us in the sense that it's not going to be a valve problem, and it does help us that it's the advance or retard of the camshaft that's causing the problem.
Right.
So, anyway, well, good luck to you, John. And as far as the northwest part of town, 38th Avenue and Indian School, close to you?
It's kind of south. I'm on, like, 79th and Bale.
Okay.
Indian Hills.
All right, Automotive Dynamics is up at Grand Avenue and 99th Avenue. I've got them up there. I've got Action at the I-17 in Deer Valley. Those guys
okay.
can help you out. Okay? All right, thank you very much, John. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back to Corky and Scott. Those are our first two callers, 602-508-0960. And if you'd like to join us, we've got three open lines, 602-508-0960. And the crew that's sitting in the studio today is from Harker's Automotive. Jeremy has 12 master techs. Bob, he just kind of hangs around. Ellen tells Bob what to do. But I think between Jeremy and Bob, they've been able to fix just everything, about everything. I think if not everything, I've been able to send him. So we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. See where we're at. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem, Jeremy, and Ellen and Bob, all from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School, are sitting here next to me. They're pretty good diagnosticians, but they're only as good as you being able to give us the symptoms. So the symptoms kind of have to match. And there's three answers. Yes, no, or I don't know, and all three of them are acceptable. Let me tell you real quick about another good shop in town, and that's Action Auto. We talked about them, I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom's a great guy. I've known him since 1983. He does really good work, he has really good staff, and most important than anything else, he's a great fisherman. He has ASC Master Certified Techs, they know how to fix your car, and Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, he's a good guy. And if you don't have a shop in that area, maybe you should go in for an oil change and see how you like them. Let's go back to the phones, and let's go to, is it Corky? Did I write that down?
That's correct.
Okay, Corky, the floor is yours.
Okay, so I have a 1998 Jeep Wrangler 4x with standard transmission. Coming off the interstate a couple days ago, I started losing power, pulled over, shut off the vehicle, started it back up. It started, it would idle. As soon as I gave it gas, it didn't want to do anything, just sputtered and spit. Eventually, I was able to nurse it back to my home, which is about 3 miles away, doing the same thing. I got it there, let it set for a while, went out and started it, and it ran normal. I'd hold it at like 2,000 RPMs for 3 or 4 minutes with no missing at all.
Okay. Now, so, it appears, hold on, it appears that the manual transmission has nothing to do with the story, right? The clutch is not slipping. You're
correct.
Just running out of engine power. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Correct. So I make a long story short, I took it to my normal mechanic who has been really good, and he diagnosed saying that the possibility they put a fuel pressure gauge on it, and it was at in the normal specs but a little bit low, and we had an engine light that said check engine. He said it showed that the engine was running lean, and he suggested replacing the pump. I just wanted your take on that.
Well, has it ever had a pump?
It had a pump 2 years ago, and it looked. I went back and looked at the records from the person I bought it from. It appeared to be a factory pump, OEM.
Okay.
Because it was $575.
Okay. Well, I don't like factory stuff because there is no such thing as factory stuff. 75% of the new Ford trucks made offshore. Ford assembles their cars in Japan and in Mexico and the United States, but the parts come from every part of the world. So your OEM part is no better than I can buy in a variety of other things. Two oil filter companies, Wix and Champ, they make everything. They paint the cans differently. So, you know, that don't lose sight of the fact that most shops can get the same part at a better price. I'm thinking he's got a fuel supply problem.
Right.
And hold on, I'm going to turn on your microphone so we can talk. Alan, do you ever rent the fuel gauge for a day or so to somebody?
No, we have not ever done that.
We do. We have an extra one, and we just tape it to the windshield, run it through the crack, and we take a deposit, and we want them to do their own diagnosis.
And
it's a matter of, hey, when it runs poorly, does it drop? What is the drop? Yeah, when it runs poorly, it goes to 21. Otherwise, it's 40. And so that kind of helps in the diagnostic.
Yeah.
The rent is like $200, but never mind that.
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
I think we're missing out on something.
That is the truth. So anyway, that's what we're thinking. It'd be nice if you'd let your shop, or if you'd ask your shop, to loan you a gauge for a day or so. And if they want to rent you a gauge, that's fine. You're not going to be able to buy that for anything cheap, but it's a good idea. But I'm not willing to say, two-year-old pump, I'm not willing to say that you have a fuel starvation. And when he said it might be the pump, here's what he's saying. I'm guessing it's the pump. And that's...
Yeah, let me jump in here. The pump that was put in 2 years ago, the actual electric part of the pump could be good. And I've run into this to a number of times where when you put a pump in, and so that's a little bit older of a Wrangler, they don't usually come as a complete assembly anymore. A lot of them, you have the connection at the pump, and then it goes through the sender to another connection. And a lot of those harnesses don't get replaced when you put the pump in. So what you can have is a little bit of a loose connection or something that when it heats up or cools off or it gets a certain temperature, you're not getting the full power to the pump. And then when you shut it off, it cools off. That connection is restored. So sometimes when things are put in, you'll take them apart, and if you don't look real close at just the connection or the harness between the pump motor and then maybe the sending unit itself, because I just recently had one where the connection at the pump was okay, but when it comes to that connector up into the sender itself, that was a little loose. And so what happens is they get hot from that original pump failure. It opens up, and then you've replaced the problem there, but later down the road, you'll have something come up that technically isn't the fuel pump,
correct,
but it is still a fuel problem.
Well, can't you just buy the whole assembly that comes with the harness from the lid down?
Unfortunately, we're getting into a lot more issue where, especially the older models,
yeah,
you know, 98, you're talking
just pump only.
Okay.
Quite a older model, and ideally you'd want to do that, and but even if you do that, there is still that connection outside that can also have that same thing. Because amperage with electrical circuits goes through the whole thing. So if you have a pump that goes out, all your connections, you know, will get kind of taxed and loaded a little bit. And you may have one that is okay for a while, and then as the years go by, or 2 years in this case, maybe something is getting to where there's a little more resistance. That resistance turns into heat. It'll open up, and then you'll lose fuel pressure.
Okay, but in reality, Bob, the gauge will tell us what we want, because if it drops way down, then and comes back up in some period of time.
Down to what area?
Yeah, at least that is. So, Corky, I don't know what to tell you at this point. You have two choices. You can wait till it gets worse and easier to find. You can get somebody to loan you or rent you, or you can buy your own fuel pressure gauge and tape it to the outside of your windshield, or you can hire somebody to guess. And I think you ought to.
Right.
I'll tell you something else too. Let me ask you a question. Who drives this truck? You?
Me, and what's really strange is I drove it down to the shop with no problems at all. I've driven it around town since then. I drove it back from the shop without any problems.
Okay. Well, where I was going with this is the kids at ASU go through fuel pumps a lot. And the reason why is the fuel pump. Well, do you know why that is?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, they always run off the bottom quarter of the tank, and the pump is lubricated and cooled by the fuel in the tank. So when you're running down near the empty all the time, and stop pointing at your wife, Jeremy. When you're running down an empty all the time, the pump doesn't get lubricated and cooled by the gas. So it's a real easy thing. Is the car comes in, it's got an eighth of a tank, and the fuel pump's wiped out of it. That's why I ask you about the fuel. If you're running off a quarter and north of that, then that's less likely to happen. And it's a good diagnosis to fill the tank and see if it's any better than when you run it down to an eighth of a tank. But anyway, Corky,
and in reality, I did have it. It was below a quarter of a tank, maybe down to around an eighth or so. The light hadn't come on yet. It's a 19-gallon tank. And the guy said, well, that's good, because that way if I have to pull it, it'll be a lot lighter for me to pull it.
Okay, and I can understand. But just once, I'm not gonna sit on that comment. So just once it happened below a quarter, I'm not going to guess that it needs a fuel pump. But anyway, thank you, Corky. We appreciate your call. And Scott, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes. Good morning, folks. I appreciate the call.
You bet.
Hey, I'm working on an older Chevy pickup. It's a 73 Chevy. I replaced the radiator with a brass and a copper radiator. I went ahead and put the automatic transmission lines, and either the threads or one line, either the threads were bad originally, or I cross-threaded it.
Okay.
So I guess I have two questions. Number one is if you can recommend a radiator shop, or number two, can I run a pipe or a thread or a pipe tap or a tubing line tap.
Okay. All right. Well, you took the words right out of my mouth, because I was going to ask Bob that. I don't know if we can tap that, because it's a flare.
Yeah, it's a flare fitting.
Yeah.
You've only got about three threads to grab a hold of. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say most likely you're going to need to remove that fitting and have a radiator shop maybe resolder it. But it needs to be pulled and looked at.
It's the threads.
We understand.
Okay.
I think you should get some old gray-haired guy to take a look at this, because right now you need another radiator, or you're going to have to pull the tank and put another tank on that side. But there's a lot of us old guys that probably can straighten that up, probably can work it in and out, probably can get it to hold fluid. The only other option you got is to put an auxiliary transmission cooler on it and hang it in front of the radiator.
Which I do. I do have an auxiliary.
All right. Well, Bob, does he need both? Oh, wait. Do you haul anything?
No. I don't haul nothing. It's just even at idle, it's happening.
Okay. But you said you had another auxiliary radiator or a transmission cooler?
Yeah, an aftermarket transmission cooler.
All right,
yeah.
Bob, what would you do?
Well, if he's not doing any hauling, the aftermarket cooler probably would be big enough. Do you know what size it is, how big it is?
The cooler itself. Well, I would imagine. I got to look at it right now. Maybe a 10. Your standard.
Okay.
I'm looking at it right now, and maybe it's 12 by 8 or 12 by 10, maybe.
You should be adequate to just bypass your radiator cooler and go directly to that and run it through that.
That's a good idea. And one other thing, if you want to find out if you're overheating, have you ever got one of those temperature guns from Harbor Freight?
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
One.
And on your gauge, you can also gun the top hose. The transit is going to typically run 10 degrees hotter than the coolant in your cooling system.
But, so, you know, when you say bypass the radiator itself, the threads in the radiator itself is the ones that are bad.
Now, I know we're going to bypass that cooler altogether. We're going to cut your lines, the fittings off there, and we're going to run that to the front cooler.
Okay, so, I got what you're saying. Yeah.
All righty. Well, listen, thank you very much, Scott. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The old guys know how to fix those threads about half the time. Would you agree? Half the time we could probably, and I don't know about you, but I'd probably get some steel thread and run it in there, in and out, and see if you could straighten
up. He
needs
to look at the fitting going into it, make sure that isn't what also burgered up.
And you're right. The end result, the success of the repair is simply, does it leak or not?
Yeah.
That's
it'll either
it.
Work or it won't.
Yeah. So, anyway, I hope I didn't offend you, Jeremy, because I talked about gray-haired guys. And
you did say old gray-haired guys.
Yeah, and that's okay.
You have gray hair.
You know what? It, no matter how old you get, you're not going to have enough experience that we do. And you certainly don't want somebody going in and doing brain surgery that has, you know, is just now starting to grow hair on his chest, you know? You want somebody who's a little older than that. All right, we're going to come back in just a few minutes and do more calls, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And one other good shop here in town is Auto Dynamics, family-owned and operated since 1982. Chuck and I go back to 1983, and now Derek, his son, runs Automotive Dynamics. An interesting concept that we're all watching. They don't pay the technicians a commission or a percentage of your repair bill, so therefore they don't sell unnecessary parts and repairs. That's kind of something that we've heard about, but I know that I and many of the rest of us is kind of looking on how that works. And basically you're putting your technicians on salary, and maybe they don't get motivated, maybe they get too motivated, we don't know. But Auto Dynamics is, in spite of all of that, Auto Dynamics is a large and trusted place for complete automotive services in Sun City. And I think I said it already, but they're on Grand Avenue, on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. So we'll come back and take your calls. Here's the phone number, 602-508-0960. We got lots of iHeart people, and that is 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. I had a guy call me, I don't know, from out of town, way far away, and he says, I would like, this is probably when I was in a bad mood, I would like one of your technicians to come on the air and tell us how it's like, what it's like to work for you. That ain't happening. No, we got Eddie Cruz that has been with us 30 years, and Jeff's been with us a long time. I've got a lot of old timers working for me, and I think we all get along just fine. They know that when they get called to my office, they're either going to get a hug and a kiss or get their butt chewed, and most of the time it's an attaboy. Do you get attaboys, Jeremy?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Every
from
every day.
Ellen or Bob.
Well,
from Ellen or Bob.
Probably.
Hey,
me.
He gets.
Yes.
Oh, let's see. All right, we know that. You need to be quiet when I'm asking him. My goodness, talk about thumping your chest over there. Oh, it's me. Poor Bob sitting over in the corner. Why don't you take his microphone away from him? Holy, what do we need you for over here? All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-960, 960 the Patriot.
And here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting with me in the studio for the next, hour, Jeremy, 12-level master. He's handled 12, and I guess you just got an award here.
I did.
And tell me about it.
So I got the ASC Technician of the Year, which is a national award they give out. And to be honest, it's pretty big shock to me. But they said based on the highest test scores in the nation, I was of course, they asked Bob and Ellen if I was worthy of the Technician of the Year before they gave it to me.
They didn't ask Bob and Ellen the right question. How many questions did you answer for him? That's the right question. So you have 12 tests you've passed.
Right.
And a master's just got 8, sometimes an L1 and L2. But
right.
The master has 8, and I don't have anybody of your level either. We've got some masters, and I am. You know, they had a deal where after 25 years, you got to retire, and you were called an ASE Master Emeritus.
Oh.
But that's gone.
Oh.
I have a plaque downstairs that says that, but that's now gone off the website. So I'm not quite sure what happened to that. But in Scottsdale, coming up quick, when is it? There's going to be a big band?
November, I believe it's
11th and 12th, okay. I think.
So, folks, the bottom line is ASE is the Automotive Service Excellence Group. They certify technicians' capabilities, and they test us. And so we have to pass tests in order to get patched. And a master's got 8. Jeremy's in a class all of his own because you've taken everything. Did you do paint and body?
I don't do paint and
body. Okay, it's all mechanical.
Right.
It's all mechanical. So that's kind of an important consideration. Bob, are you going to take credit for teaching him everything he knows?
I'm hoping he knows everything I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Does he know how to make Ellen happy when he makes her mad?
I'm going to be honest. He's probably the only one that doesn't make me mad.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, that's fair enough. Okay, let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair. Brian and Thelma come from two families that have been around Mesa for a lot of years, the Thompsons and the Vivians. Those two guys go back to the 1960s, and actually I worked for two of them when I was a kid. So Brian and Thelma have been around a long time. They have ASE certified technicians. They're on Main, just east of Stapley. They've been around a long time. They have towing services, and they do the full gamut of car repair. So if you live in Mesa, it's the only shop in Mesa that I refer people to, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, located on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Let's go to the phones, and let's pull up, let me get my paper. Mike, how can I help you, Mike?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to get everybody's their thoughts on that Nissan transmission. I think it's a CVT. I'm looking at a small SUV, and I like the Rogue better because it's just a little bit bigger, but they had that transmission in there.
Okay,
and
Bob.
And everybody's all over it.
Okay, I can tell you right now, it's going to be a 50% vote in the work in the industry. But tell me, Bob, would you buy something with a CVT?
I personally would not buy a CVT.
Okay, and Jeremy?
Well, I mean,
yes or no, Jeremy.
If it's a yes or no, I'd probably say no.
Okay, and the reason I took that away from you is because your head is going, well, can I fix that? And if I can fix that and it's going to be easy, then I would probably say yes. But your skill level is so much above everybody else's. I've never liked those. First of all, it's hard to find somebody to rebuild them. Second of all, the guys that say they can rebuild them can't rebuild them. So then you're stuck with the crate one at the dealership. And so to answer your question, you got 3 no's, Mike. I'm sorry if we made you mad.
No, that's fine.
Three no's.
That's what I'm reading across everything that I read, too. And they say there's no gears in there. And you just, as an old car person, you kind of, how does this work? And they had trouble with them in the beginning. And the engineers say they're the greatest thing since microwave popcorn.
Okay,
but everybody seems to hate them.
Gears. They don't have any gears, and they've got one small pulley and one big pulley, and it takes you all the way to the end in a visual way.
Right. And it does give you infinite gear ratios, which is a definite benefit for fuel mileage and stuff like that. And on paper, they're really good when you look at their benefits. The problem is they don't seem to do as well under higher loads. And then when you get – they don't seem to last as long either on average. Now, I'm not saying everyone, but depending on how it's driven, one of the things I was going to say is if you can find a lower mileage one, I would be a little more apt to give it a try. But just a yes or no on average, I wouldn't personally go for one, and that's just my opinion that they don't tend to last as long, and they are definitely more expensive when you do have to replace.
Well, not only that, is you're not going to pull anything except a shopping cart behind that. So, you know, it's
true.
Not going to be anything like that. And give us second choice and third choice.
I was looking at the RAV4 and the CRVs. But I like the Rogue because it's just a little bit bigger. But I'm looking for – I don't want to go up to a really big SUV like, you know, a Kia or something like that or a big Hyundai. I like the smaller ones. But the Rogue is just a little bit bigger than the smaller one.
Okay.
And I didn't know if there's –
I would probably go the CRV over the RAV4 personally, but I think you're
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
I don't know.
The Bob, what are you saying, Bob?
Splitting hairs on it, in my opinion. The CRV is pretty good overall. They seem to hold up pretty decent.
The RAV4 is a popular one.
Yeah.
We see a lot of those. So I'm with you guys. Of those two, you could buy either one, and it wouldn't bother me, and I wouldn't bother me fixing on either one of them. So I think we're going to vote that the B choice is the one we think you should go with.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mike. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Alan, when they come in and they say, have they have this car or truck, when do you hit them between the eyes with a huge estimate because you don't want to work on it? And I'm going to make it easy for you. And there's no way you're going to look good by working on it.
They say that to me. There's no way we're going to look good.
Well, he's saying what happens when they bring in the
motorhomes.
They bring in the Range Rover.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't work on it. We don't have any information on it, and we cut them off right at the front.
This is what I tell people with a motorhome. Take your house, pick it up, and shake it for 50,000 miles. And that's exactly what you're going to have with a motorhome. Water leaks and wind leaks and air conditioning problems and heater problems, and just shake your house for a little while and figure out that's exactly how motorhomes are. But they have better suspensions, and they have better engine and transmissions, and especially if they're using the Allison 1000, 2000, 3000, 4000, those are really good transmissions. And so it seems like that they're improving motorhomes, but there's a lot of cars. If they come in and say they've had it at six different shops and nobody can fix it, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in hopping on my white horse and slaying somebody's dragon because they've already spent a bunch of money. So they're going to expect me to probably feel sorry for them and participate financially in the repair, and it's difficult for me to do that.
Yeah, we had a BMW come in that had been to the dealership and a few other places. Complaining about, or they had told him that it needed a heater core.
Well, go to the symptoms first.
Well, the symptoms were he had mist coming out of the evaporator or the ductwork.
And mist is half water, half air. It's kind of foamy stuff. It's like a window sprayer. So you turn on the air and you're feeling a little bit of this moisture come out.
So he brought it in with the idea that that's what he wanted was a heater core. We did some preliminary checking, and the usual symptoms is you're going to have an oily feel if it's antifreeze on the ductwork, on the floor. We couldn't find any of that. So we looked a little farther, and we found that the drain tubes that gets rid of the condensation off of the heater core were plugged up. What he was getting was condensation blowing back in into the vents.
And stirred up by the fan.
By the fan.
And stirred up. Okay.
Right.
Now, this estimate that was given by somebody else, I'm keeping that door shut, with how much money?
It's about $1,600 for a heater core.
And what did Ellen rip them off for cleaning out the vents?
I think she took them for a whole $100, $110, something like that.
All right. So he was pretty happy. Now, see, Jeremy, I was thinking, I had heard that before, and I was thinking, he put it up on the lift and cleaned the vents, or you did. I'm thinking, do you have one of those still gasoline-powered blowers? I'm thinking duct tape all over the ducts and just
blow them open.
Blow all that poop out the vents. So I don't know. I'm a cowboy. That's the way we used to do things.
Well, actually, Jim was working on that, and I know when he did find the blockage, he got drenched with about half a gallon of water.
Oh, it's like a toilet. That water in there is like a toilet. Yeah. And so, all right, we got a caller. Who's that?
That would be Kevin.
Kevin, good morning to you. What can we do for you?
Good morning, Mark. I've got a question for you about I have a 99 F-350 Super Duty, the 7.3, and about a month ago, my air conditioner just started. It gets cold and it runs. And then it just, once in a while, it just starts getting warm. I found several things. If I rev it up, I haven't done any testing on it, but if I can rev it up, my RPMs, and it gets cold again, or if I turn it off a little bit and just turn it right on again almost, it gets cold again.
Okay.
And I didn't know how to pursue this.
I'd bypass the low-pressure switch first and see if that made a difference, and then I'd bypass the high-pressure switch and see if that made a difference. Jeremy, it's on your plate.
Well, if it changes when you rev it up, you've got a couple things that it could be doing. If it's low on Freon, And there's an easy way to check on this particular model. When they have an accumulator, there's like a can out there. I don't know if you've seen this aluminum-looking can that's near the firewall.
On the passenger side.
Yep. Yes, so when it starts getting warm, if you put your hand on that and feel if that's getting warm too, usually you have a lower Freon. Now, it also could be the compressor's not pumping at idle. There's some other things that it could be. But if you don't have gauges and some of the testing equipment, Mark was saying, if the compressor's shutting off and by, you know, jumping that low pressure switch is going to keep the compressor on, because if the compressor can't pump, it's not going to be able to, you know, keep that line cold.
It's just diagnostic. If you do the low pressure switch, then it's typically a Freon level or something like that in an orifice tube. If the high pressure switch kicks out, then typically it's airflow across the condenser.
Right, and the fan can, if you don't have good airflow across the condenser, it's not going to be dropping that temperature, and that will also give you some warm air. So there are a lot of possibilities on that one. You know, warm air from an AC has multiple things it can do, but you have the electrical end. The compressor could be shutting off, and then you got to figure out why, because that can be because of high pressures from the fan not pulling enough, or even sometimes the low pressure switch will go bad and it'll kick it off when it's not supposed to.
Ellen, how much is that diagnostic?
Well, actually, I would start with, when they start telling me that, is either going to be electrical check for half hour's worth of time,
dollars,
or an hour,
dollars.
$108.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. And that's really it. Now, let me ask you guys, do you have the ability to pull the Freon, weigh it, clean it, and put it back in?
Yes, we do.
And how much does that cost, Ellen?
Gosh, you do.
What are you looking at?
About 110.
Okay.
He doesn't figure it. I just give him an estimate on checking it out, and I don't look all that up.
In our place, it's 125. And so that what we're talking about, Kevin, is this. First of all, your 7.3 is worth today as much as it was when you bought it. So if you put that up for sale, you'd have people banging on your door. On your air conditioning.
Yeah, I won't do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, It's my second one, and I'm keeping this one.
Okay. We pull all your Freon out. Let's say it holds 20 ounces. We pull all your Freon out. We clean it to remove the moisture and any kind of solids. And then we measure it. And maybe it's 15 ounces. So we know you're 5 ounces low. So we're going to give you back your 20 or your 15. And we're going to add 5 more to it. And it'll blow ice cubes at you almost all the time. Especially if nobody's done any work to the AC. And the last time you had it serviced was when Fred Flintstone lived on your street.
That's so, about it.
Okay, so I'm going to open it up because we're going to be in the middle like you, $100 to $150, and I'd say you got about a 75% chance that that's going to take care of your problem, I'm guessing. Okay?
Okay, excellent.
All
thank
right,
you.
Good luck to you. That's been a piece of good of equipment, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we call it an electronic dipstick because we've never had a dipstick for the Freon.
Yeah.
And all those pressures, air across the condenser, ambient temperature, whether you got your zipper up or down, whether you're quacking like a duck, you've got all these variables in the old days.
Have you gotten into the new Freon?
Oh.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, how much does that cost the tank,
well,
Ellen?
A bunch.
You're looking in the 450 range.
Right. So what we used to pay for our 134 or our 12, this is 5, 10, 20, percent higher.
Oh, yeah. I remember when R12 was 69 cents a can.
Yeah. I bought a train load back in the 1979 with a bunch of other guys. And I think we still have a couple of bottles. But, folks, this new 1, 2, 3, 4 is expensive. And where we're making money is the used car lots because they don't have that machine's very expensive.
Yeah.
And so some of them will bring it to us and have us do the analysis and the fill up on it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more calls, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. During the break, we do the show before the show, but Jeremy had said that a gentleman had brought a vehicle in and the air conditioning wasn't working, and they found it overcharged by 4.5 tons of refrigerant. And so, Jeremy, it didn't take long to figure that out.
Well, yeah.
Hold on.
Oh,
go.
Okay, so when there's too much Freon in a system, it's almost just as bad or worse than when it's going empty, because what happens is all your pressures go really high and it won't cool. It doesn't have that same exchange where it can cool off the vehicle. On top of that, though, it puts an extremely heavy load on the compressor, and all the components in the AC. So not only do you not get the cooling, but you also really, you know, tax your system as much as possible.
It's kind of nice to know that in advance.
It definitely is nice to know that in advance rather than looking at it. So if you ever have anything done and then, you know, a lot of people don't want to tell you when they've added to it, but that can really save you a lot of headache because there's other things that can kind of have the same symptoms of high pressures other than a lot of Freon. If you get air in the system from contaminated bottles and stuff, they can also give you that same symptom as far as when you put gauges on it and they don't have the correct pressures. So there's always different things, but yeah, when you pull it out, like you were saying before, and you say, okay, this has way too much Freon, then you got to start asking some questions about, you know, well, what was the purpose for this, or, you know, why does it have too much Freon? Because that could be somebody that just randomly put Freon in. And I'll tell you, with the new cars, they're using less and less amounts of Freon. So it's really a very critical factor to put exactly the amount that system is designed to take. And if you put a little bit more, a little bit less, and I mean up to 10-15% can cause problems, you know, with how well that system works.
Well, and you bring up a good point. The 99 Ford F250 or 350 is not going to really care one way or another 5 ounces.
Right.
But the newer ones, they're going to care. And the difference is a substantial amount of refrigerant. But the real lesson here is tell your shop. Let your shop know what's been going on. Just blame it on your wife. My wife took it to her son, and he put a bunch of refrigerant. Just whatever story. Just blame it on somebody else. If you're not man enough to raise your hand and say, I overfilled it by 4 tons. So,
and I do that all the time with my wife. Anytime I forget anything, it's, you know, Carrie did not remind me.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, I'm going to give you some really good advice. When you're in trouble, you raise your hand and you say, I'm sorry, I won't do that again. And that's the end of it. Okay. So you just obviously haven't been as married as long as Bob and I have.
He'll learn.
He'll learn. All righty. Blackwell Automotive is at 40th Street and Greenway. I don't really like Tom. He doesn't know how to fix cars. Him and I have kind of been friends for the last 100 years. But what he does well is he has good staff. And of course I'm kidding. He's a very good friend of mine, as are the rest of these guys that have shops. But if you're in 40th Street and Greenway, let me tell you that I have nobody else up in that Northeast Scottsdale area. I don't have anybody else to send you to. And here's why. I have a tough time finding somebody up there that hasn't been in business 6 months or doesn't have, you know, 400 reviews and they only have 1 or 2 stars. So Blackwell's not that way. 40th Street and Greenway, you live up in that area. It's a great place to go. Gil, who have we got next?
Hey, good morning to Tom.
Tom, good morning to you. How can we help you?
I'm sorry. This is Tom asking about the transmission.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yes, I bought it was about 3 years ago. I bought a used car from my aunt, and it was a Buick Park Avenue, and it's a 2001, and it had very, very low miles on it. So I didn't want to get a car that big, but she really gave me a deal on it. But my question is, it has about 65 or 68,000 on it right now. In the time that I've had it, when is the best time, or how can I check to where I need to change the transmission fluid?
Bob,
I recommend somewhere around 60,000 miles on that. But condition of the fluid, we'll take a look at it, see what the coloring is. But I would say, just for your own protection, not knowing what the history was on it, I would certainly do it now.
Are you going to do filter and fluid, or are you going to flush and do filter too?
Depending on condition. Okay. At 60,000 miles, it's a good idea to drop the pan, take a look and see what's going on in there.
Yeah.
Just for your own protection for the first go around. We kind of recommend doing it every other time, flushing at one, do the pan the next time.
And there's a slight difference, but when we flush it, we're getting all the fluid, but we're not doing the filter.
Right.
And then the next time, we're going to do 3 or 4 quarts and do the filter.
Right.
But what happens when the transmission guy comes out and hands you the oil pan, and there's these little bitty bumps of black powder, one or two places on the oil pan, and a smattering of metal? So what does that mean?
It's called, it's got 60,000 miles on it.
Exactly. But they do that.
Yeah.
There are shops out there that walk out and show you the oil pan. They go, oh, boy, you're in trouble. in reality, it's just normal.
Yeah.
It's just normal clutch material. It's a normal shedding of metal. It's just normal. So in your particular case, I mean, realistically, he's got an 18-year-old car,
yeah,
68,000 miles. It's not like somebody's driven the wheels off of it.
Yeah, but I want to get that fluid out of there. The fluid is what does the lubricating of the seals and so on. I'd say just for your own protection, I'd get it serviced. And
okay.
That way you know you've got a few miles ahead of
Ellen,
you.
How much?
It's about $247.
Yeah,
around
we use
that,
synthetic fluid
yeah.
on that. So
okay. Yeah. And synthetic fluid is backwards compatible, so you can use synthetic as you go backwards because it's a premium oil. So, yeah, $150 to $225 depending on the whole thing, but that's what you're going to pay for a transmission service. And that's not a clutch. That's just pull the pan, okay?
Just pull the pan. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate
okay, Tom.
It.
You bet. Mm-hmm. You bet. And speaking of transmissions, Automatic Transmission Exchange is a shop that we've had in our facility or in our group of best shops for a very long time. Phil's been around since 1968 at the same location at 40th Street in Washington. So if you go up and down Washington, you look on the north side of the road, you'll see somebody. Him and Fred Flintstone were friends. And he learned about transmission repairs and replacements back then when the tires on the cars were just wood and sometimes stone. But when you talk to Phil, it won't take long for you to figure out that from the very first transmissions to the new electronics, he knows. And here's why he knows. Is because in the old transmissions, we shift your transmission with a little bit of pressure and speed and some centrifugal weights. But today we shift it by opening and closing solenoids. And so the computer controls that opening and closing of the solenoids to give you 1, 2, 3, overdrive and lockup. All that stuff is pretty easy to look at, but it's kind of hard to diagnose. So if you have a transmission question, the only place in Phoenix that does from overhauls down is Automatic Transmission Exchange. Again, 40th Street in Washington, and he's a good guy. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you'd like to join us, you certainly can. And when we come back, we're going to continue to take your calls. So if you give us a call, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. And we're going to take some callers. If you'd like to join us, you can. It's always busy at the end of the show, but we got three lines open. And, Greg, you're first.
Hi. I've got a 2017 Ford F-150 3.5.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you bought a Ford, but go ahead. I'm just teasing you.
Anyways, I've got this Ford F-150 3.5 EcoBoost, and at 22,000 miles, I started getting a cold start clanking, and it turns out that it was the timing chain, and I took it in, and it took them a couple of weeks in order to fix it. And my question to the service writers were, hey, 20,000 miles, we're replacing this timing chain in another 20,000 miles, am I going to be facing this again? And they're like, well, no, they probably re-engineered the parts. And the thing is that I go online and I look at this particular complaint, and it's been going on since 2011. So
okay. All right, we understand, and I have a question, or I have an answer for you. Talking to the service writer about something in the future, you might as well stick your head in a bucket full of water, because they don't know anything about the mechanics, and everything they say is not going to be true. Mostly that's the case in that kind of an environment. So asking them if this is going to fail in the future is like asking me if it's going to fail in the future. They don't have a clue, and neither do I. You want to comment on this EcoBoost?
I will say that EcoBoost we have seen some problems with, and it is a newer engine, so it's kind of going through these growing pains of they're having the timing chains and the actuators on those, and that's the twin turbo Ford that is really powerful,
fast.
So it's got all the bells and whistles. It's got the direct injection. It's got the advanced cam timing. It's got the turbo boost, and you just have a lot of elements that are working, and I think they're just finding that there are some weak spots, and certain things, as they engineer them, they don't foresee the longevity, and Ford likes to use the term more robust whenever they engineer something that that's been improved to make it more robust, but I think it's going through a lot of problems just recently. You're seeing a lot more of those EcoBoost engines coming in with just general problems.
Well, they've been having problems with this since 2011, and maybe they've changed the engine, but my part numbers haven't changed, which concerns me that in 20,000 miles I might be looking at this again.
Well, how do you know that your part number hasn't changed? What are you looking at the part number?
The part numbers on the parts numbers that they gave me that were bad were the same parts numbers that were listed on the replacement parts.
Were they exactly the same part numbers? Every single digit was exactly?
Especially the last
every
one.
Every single digit was the same.
Okay, well, then you got the same part. The fact of the matter is recalls come out every day of our lives. Technical service bulletins come out every day of our lives. We don't have a clue as to what's going to happen tomorrow, next month, next year. Your EcoBoost, all in all, I give it a B grade. I think it's fast. I don't know if I'd be towing anything with it because the EGT exhaust gas temperatures are going to go through the roof. But I still think it's a good vehicle, but no one can answer your question. And you can go on the internet, and I want to tell you something. Why don't you go on the internet and ask somebody to diagnose cancer in your head? They don't. There's guys out there that looked at the code and said, "Oh, I've got an EcoBoost problem, so it's a big POS." That's not the truth. They have a plugged exhaust system. So to go on the internet and talk to somebody about your problem and then draw a conclusion from that is like let's do a popular vote.
Yeah. Well, that's. I mean, I get what you're saying, but that's not what I'm saying. I went online and I've looked at the complaints over their EcoBoost timing chains going out since 2011. But thank you for your time.
Okay. All right. Good luck. When did they come out with the EcoBoost? That's 8 years ago?
I'm not exactly sure what year they came out with it. I thought it was 2010 area, somewhere right around there.
Yeah. I don't really know, and I'm not going to look it up. But the new Dodge, the new little Dodge diesel, have you had any
problems with those yet.
Yet. Yet. We've got big trucking companies that have 40 of those.
Okay.
They're out of warranty. And the EGR overheats, melts through the back of the intake manifold, and you replace everything north of the cam. And we've seen 4 or 5 of those already in a row. And like I said, these guys are putting 20, 30, 40,000 miles a year on them. So that'll take them another 2 or 3 years to figure out that we need to handle the EGR and not mount it in a plastic intake. So we're seeing a lot of that. Then we're seeing symptoms where they're going in and say, you have a DEF contamination, but they're really replacing the manifold and the EGR valve, which is the fix, but it's under warranty, but we're going to sell you a DEF.
Right.
So you have gas contamination, water contamination, and DEF contamination.
And a lot of those, they're getting rid of the EGR.
Yeah.
They're taking it out, and then they're actually having that exhaust fluid take the NOx down after it's already built up. So they're coming up with different strategies for all these emission items, but they're all a headache any way you look at it.
And the reason I was harping on the part number is there's a variety of ways. We just looked up a drive shaft for Dodge. And even though we had a change in the design of it, the part number didn't change, but you're right. There's usually letters in there that tell you that it's an upgrade.
Right. With Ford, especially, if you look at that last AA or AB,
yep,
and then they'll come with AC, and then you get down to AG, say, hey, they just keep redesigning these things, and it's pretty much the basic same part number, but they do have little, you don't even usually know what the difference is. But
and they're going to look it up in the last couple of digits, and you're right. It, what bugs me about the Fords is it'll go AB, and then it'll go AZ. And all of a sudden, we've mixed all of those.
Right.
Or you go on and you look, and they haven't. AC is the number, but then they have an AD, but they're quoting you an AC. So they're giving you the part behind the newest part.
Right.
And I guess they're selling inventory, or maybe they don't know, and I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. 602-508-0960. Chris, you're up next. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. We were talking about DEF contaminations, and that's certainly something on the radar of just about all of us. Chris, thank you for holding. What can we do for you?
Hi, how you doing? Almost afternoon.
Well, thank
you. I have a 2004 Toyota Corolla. It brought up a check engine light with a P056 about 2 months ago, which is basically a gas cap. I've played the gas cap game before, went to Toyota dealership, put on a new gas cap. Now we are, the engine light came back on. I took the ODB thing and turned it off. And it's been off for 1,000 miles. We're trying to reset it. We need to do emissions. But when I put it back on, the emissions vapor is incomplete. And we've gone 1,000 miles. And we need to get emissions by the end of the month. Any suggestions?
Well, the way you're doing it isn't the way that I do it or Jeremy does it or Bob does it. First of all, a gas cap is a really good thing to guess, but it doesn't happen very often. There's a bunch of plumbing underneath your car and underneath your hood, and we're sucking fumes off the gas tank. We're running them up front. We're running them through a variety of things, and then we're burning them again. If any part of those lines come apart, you have a problem. The top of the tank has a vent line on it. If you overfill your gas, you flood that. And then all of a sudden, you're going to get a purge valve, or you're going to get an emissions code, or you're going to get something the computer doesn't like. So the process to diagnose it is to take it into the shop. We're going to use a smoke machine, and we're going to test all the different circuits. Ellen, how much?
What year is this shop?
04.
It's 04. He's eligible for that ADQ program.
Well, okay. Go.
I've checked the lines, and okay. That is my next thing is the smoke test because I cannot find where the vapor is coming out.
All right.
The EVAP system monitor is the toughest monitor to run anyway.
Wait a minute. The monitor monitors the performance of the circuit. After so many startups and cool downs and 10, 20, 30 mile an hour trips, the monitor resets. When you reset the monitor, you pass emissions. When you said that you kept failing, we all know that you haven't reset the monitor because the problem still exists.
Right, that's what I was getting to, is when you have an issue, on top of that being hard to run anyway, it doesn't want to run that monitor. So once it finally runs it, it will reset a code. Sometimes it'll set the code before it completes the monitor. But yeah, what you have to do is find out what the main issue is. And a pressure test and a vacuum test will tell you if you have a bad cap too. So I mean, the cap can, that code, and I believe it's a 456, is a pressure code where you can have multiple things cause that. And I know a lot of caps get put on that really are leaks, especially with Toyota. They have a lot of systems that can just give you very little small leaks that are difficult to find, but they will stop that from.
Are you going to the dealer for a Toyota cap, knowing full well that Stance makes just about every cap out there?
Yeah, I played that game with Kia once, and I did go to a certified Toyota dealership.
Okay.
Yeah,
Jeremy?
I put that on.
And then the code came back, and like I said, I reset the check engine light, and we've driven it for 1,000 miles, and I was hoping the check engine light would come back on. But when I test it, like I said, it says that it's incomplete.
Oh, okay, and we talked about that. Here's the drive cycle that you have to run, okay? And you're just not running it, or the problem exists. It says start your car up and let it idle for 3 minutes. Drive around the block with right-hand turns at 27 miles an hour. Wave a dead chicken over your head until it clucks. Stop at Jack in the Box and get a burrito. And this is what it wants us to do. You take two guys. And one guy drives and the other guy tells him. Have you ever thought about how difficult it is in Phoenix to maintain 41 miles an hour for 8 minutes? And this is the monitor protocol. Of course, I'm making fun of it, but this is the protocol. So you have no idea. Simply just driving miles, 1,000 miles, doesn't guarantee you're going to reset the monitor. Plus, the monitor wants some heat cycles. We want to see cold and then hot, cold and then hot.
And it can't get too... The temperature can't start too hot either, or else the monitor won't run.
So those are the kinds of issues you've got. Somebody has to diagnose it, or you can continue to guess. And let me tell you, if you want to guess, then I'd do the canister purge. I'd replace the O-ring or the rubber grommet on the top of the tank, all that kind of stuff. But you haven't been successful in whatever you've done. you can continue to guess, or you can hire somebody. Ellen, how much?
We do the diagnostic, and we can run the monitors for them. We do it because it's easier for us. And a lot of times about, what, $55 to run the monitors for them. So $108, check it out, find out what it is, $55 to run the monitors.
And be done.
You know, a lot of times we'll take them through a mission. If it passes, okay, we'll take it down ourselves just to make sure, just to give them rest assured it's fixed.
Okay. And so it's, a lot of times you'll agree that it costs $108 to find it and 50 cents to fix it. Not every time, but a lot of times.
But you got to pay for the tech and our equipment and knowledge.
No, and that's right. Jeremy, how many times have you taken a broken plastic line and put a piece of windshield wiper hose between the two of them?
Quite a few times.
You didn't know whether to tell the truth on that or not. You didn't know.
I was also going to say, you know, I've had multiple times where people have said they've replaced the gas cap, and the gas caps have so many variations right now that a lot of times you'll say it's a brand new cap, but it doesn't quite go on, you know, the way the old one did, and it won't make the seal. And I had one where the guys had a brand new cap. Even sometimes you'll get it from the dealer, and it's just simply the wrong cap. They can have flex fuel styles and different things that'll make that cap just a little bit different. And until you run the test, you'll see, hey, that brand new cap has a leak, and it's either the wrong cap or it's not fitting right.
When Alan talks about running the monitors, what do you do to run the monitors on the dyno?
Well, yeah, we have a dyno, and you know, most of the time, that's the quickest way for us to run the monitors because, like Mark was saying, it's really difficult to have a steady 40 mile an hour for 10 minutes without any hard accelerations, to have a gradual decrease in speed, and all those things come into play, as well as, you know, the EVAP monitor a lot of times will have an 8-hour soak where the coolant temp and the intake air temp have to be the same when it starts. And if it's not, it won't
count
initialize.
That. It won't yeah. count that.
So you can just keep driving it and driving it. And, you know, there's certain car lines where if it doesn't get below 90 degrees, it will never even start it anyway.
It won't count that.
Right.
It won't count that. So we're looking at the air in the motor and first thing in the morning. We're looking at the ambient temperature. They better match. And if they don't match, that's the heat cycle I was talking about. Get them hot, cool them off. Get them hot. What's the chance of somebody in their car driving a monitor?
Well, just normal driving, eventually it will, but it's not going to be any time quickly. It's not going to be, it's going to be days before it runs.
If not 10 days.
Right.
And it depends on, is it used daily or is it not used
How
daily?
How they drive it, too. You know, the person that's just getting in, driving at a short distance is not going to run it.
It's daily, it's three-way, it's stop and go, it's everything but heat. Unfortunately, we live in this valley of the sun. Sun being very hot, so we have not had cool temperatures on the vehicle.
Yeah. Well, the monitor is a tough thing unless you've got a dynamometer. Sometimes we'll send two techs out to see if they can run some portion of the process, but that gets kind of expensive because you got two guys out there at $130, $120, $110 an hour, and all they're going to do is have fun with one another. It says here, Jeremy, let's go 110 miles an hour for 6.5 miles.
I did it all.
So anyway,
Chris, where is the young lady located that suggested the $108 test?
Oh, she's in Tennessee. No, I'm just teasing you.
Well, we should probably get enough mileage on that.
All right. 38th Avenue and Indian School. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a coupon for $5 off, okay?
That sounds wonderful.
All righty. Good luck to you, Tris. All right, remember Chris.
Okay,
Chris. And if you get the
$5,
I'm going to give it to you right now. Chris is coming in.
No.
I can't give away money without doing it, okay?
Hey, you better come in now because I just made $5.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a good, I said one time, take it to Blackwell, and here's the secret word, and he'll no charge the ticket. And so I didn't call him. And so the guy comes in and says, there's a secret word. And Tom goes, huh? And he starts making up all these words. And Tom goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he goes, well, Mark Salem said, and Tom raises his hand and says, say no more. He's been hit in the head so often you can look in one ear and then you see light on the other. So, and you know, Jeremy, it's the truth. I've been bucked off horses and have some, and that's the excuse that I always use. You say, I'm sorry. I say, traumatic brain injury. Too many times. All right, who's on the phone, Gil?
We have Daniel.
Daniel, good morning.
Good morning. I'm out in East Mesa, and after listening to you guys for a while, I know to ask if what they're going to do is going to fix the symptoms. I've been running into a number of mediocre shops that have plenty of excuses why what they did didn't fix the symptoms. So I'm just curious where you're going to find reviews on shops, because I don't think you have something way out in East Mesa.
No, you just go to Yelp. Just go to Yelp and put in the zip code, and it'll tell you about all the shops there. Let me explain about the, are you going to fix, are you fixing with my money or yours? Or are you guessing with my money or yours? There's times we're going to say to you, it's not there. We can't fix what's not there when we're looking. It's an intermittent problem. Sometimes we'll give you an idea on what to do. Fill up the gas tank. Run the gas tank low. Is it cold? Is it hot? All that kind of stuff. But when they look you in the eye and they say, like Bob cited this today, that it's going to be $1,600 for an evaporator, then you say, are you guessing? Because if we're guessing, I want to know if we're guessing with my money or your money. That's how that works. So you're separating the men from the boys and the girls from the women, because you're going to say to Ellen, I don't want to pay for a guess. You're telling me that $199 is going to fix my car. I want my old parts back. I want them in the original box. And it's a slam dunk. But sometimes we do guess. And sometimes it's not uncommon for us to say, can we pull the fuel filter out and blow through it? Do you remember how Louis Armstrong blew in his trumpet? And you remember how big his cheeks used to get? That's exactly what a plug fuel filter looks like. Now, in Jeremy's situation, he'll typically walk up to the front counter and have Ellen blow on the fuel filter. And then he'll smoke a cigarette around her as she's blowing the. But really and truly, there's times we guess. But in reality, you look at the shop and you just say, if you're guessing, whose money are we guessing with? And that separates the boys from the man and stuff like that. As far as West or East Valley is concerned, I can recommend Thompson's on Main Street just east of Stapley. They're a good place, and they'll treat you right. But I don't know anybody else in that area.
They'll do general work as well? Thompson?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And best part about all of us is if it's not in our ballpark, we'll tell you. And most of us will refer you to somebody. On a BMW, I got a shop down the street from me called BMW Buyer Motor Works. And when we got that seat assembly that's $1,200, he's got a kit that'll fix it. And so we're sending those kinds of seats to him. So, yeah, we all have that. Anyway, we're gonna fly now. Jeremy, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
And you probably hold the ASE certifications that no one in Arizona has, and evidently you scored highest of everybody in the United States. So you should be really proud of yourself, and I think you should talk to Bob and Ellen about a raise. But aside from all of that, Ellen?
Yes, we're very proud of him also. Mm-hmm. He's our main guy, and he doesn't even have an attitude, which we love.
Yeah.
He does, and I haven't seen anything this guy has not been able to figure out.
Kelly, talk to me. Does he say, I'm sorry I messed up?
Yes, actually he does. He's a good man, a humble man, and just a great person. So if you want an honest answer, he's the one you go to.
20 years. You guys have been married 20 years.
Does he say he's sorry?
I'm not asking you. You know what? Hey, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Your microphone.
I was Snow White.
Her microphone just got turned off. So we're not interested about you and Bob, okay? I asked Kelly on that. We know, Jeremy, that that's the magic words. I'm sorry I made a mistake. And then if they keep yapping, you say, wait a minute, I've already apologized. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But I'm not here to give you marital advice. But at 20 years, you're okay. And Bob and Ellen, you guys, what, 60, 65? And I took you. Could, no one can hear you talking because I took Bob. How many years?
49 years.
Well, let me change it. How many happy years?
49.
Okay, 49. All righty. Mark at MarkSalem.com is my email address, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Bob and Ellen and Jeremy can all be found at 38th Avenue and Indian School. That's Larry Harker's Automotive. They've been around a long time. And between the three of them, you're pretty much guaranteed to get a good price and get a good job.